Right, Paddy. Tamarash Arishik Paddy Vaughan and Garagartinu. Paddy, we have a lot of wee stories to cover yet, but I'd like you to start with old customs at funerals and all that, Paddy.
Oh, aye, well, you know about the collecting of the offerings from years gone by.
Yeah.
people paid a, if you were well up in the higher bracket of society, the priest would pay a pound. If you were in the lower bracket of society, you would pay maybe a shilling, you know. So he paid the pound and the whole lot went back to him again, you know. And
The parish priest got all that money in.
The parish priest got the whole lot. I have the leaflets that was the time my father died, all the people that paid the offerings.
But originally, Paddy, all that money collected would have gone to the family. It started originally.
Aye, but then when it stopped, I don't know, but yeah, it went all back to the priest. There was a woman down in the bottom, and she was Connor, Mary Connor, and she was a Mrs. Maxwell then. She was hired when she was 14 in Fannett. And when her father died, she came back, and she says to me, she says, the priest gathered the offerings and they hadn't as much as would buy a coffin. They were lying covering him in the bed, only an oil net of a boat, an oil fishing net. And she says that she went to Scotland after that, and she went kind of against the clergy. She wouldn't believe in nothing, you know, because she says we were poor and we had nothing. So she went away anyway, and I used to do jobs for her, you know. But it was a sad state of affairs, you know.
It sure
she
was.
Turned against the Catholic religion altogether, you know. Because, they were getting nothing out of it. But Father Boyle was here. And he died in Rathmullen. He was a curate here. He was parish priest in Rathmullen. But he was a priest here now, I was told. And I had to go up here to shift the devil. And that wouldn't be a yarn.
Just up this hill here?
Yeah, up there.
What's that hill called now?
It's called Gorton na Braid.
Gorton na Braid, right.
But man, the people will be very reluctant in telling you anything, you see, but I'll tell you, there was a fellow called John McLafferty, and he had a cousin called Hughie Brown, and John used to, they weren't married, and they'd cross from one house to the other, which would be about 3/4 of a mile, and Hughie would come over, and he would go back, you know, before they were married or anything. But this particular night he went over and he says, it was terrible altogether. He says, the sky busted with hailstones and warning and everything. And he says, when he passed this particular spot, he says he heard the laughing and the giggling and all going on down to, that's, you see that hill out there?
Yeah.
That's where a hill they call Andy's Hill. And he says it went out that country. But he says that was going on for years, and the priest had to go up there. So the priest says to them, he says, you put on the stone on him, and he sent him out that hill there into the Law Wadi. And he says, you might have waited too long. That thing came as a pup. It came as a pup to the places up there, and it started to annoy them. And it got bigger and bigger, and it started to eat the bottom out of the door and all. And that's what eventually happened, that the priest had to go, and that was the end of the story. But they wouldn't tell you anything about it, but there was an old man used to drive cattle for Mandy McBride. Mandy was a dealer, he lived down the street. He was Mandy Taylor, they called him. And Mandy always got heavy to drive the cattle. There were no such thing as trailers or tractors or anything at that time. It was fair, no marts. And he would drive the cattle to maybe Milford, and had a field up there, and they'd be kept there in the field during the night for the fair the following day. But the bus used to leave here in the morning at 7:20. But Hughie, this man wouldn't come down. He would go on the 11 o'clock bus. And when he'd come in on the 7 o'clock bus in the evening, he would sit down in the McBride's there till after 3 o'clock in the morning. He would sit sleeping on the chair in the kitchen. And then he'd go out the road and he'd go home. He wouldn't be on the road after. He wouldn't go up there after 3 o'clock. Why, I don't know. But he was afraid, you see. But
he heard of the old story.
Well, he lived in that area, and so there were three houses just where this was taking place, and he was one of them.
Right.
His house was one of them.
And so that was surely the devil.
Something must have happened. Somebody must have been murdered.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a yarn, you know, but a lot of people knew that it was that it was fact,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Paddy, we'll go back to the customs at Wakes. You said about a hole put in a coffin.
That's right, Dad.
Tell me the name now that you used there.
It was a bell ringer.
A bell ringer?
It was a bell, and it was what you call a dead ringer. And when people would be buried, when people would be in the coffin, there were a hole put in the coffin, and this thing was protruding a string into a bell. And if there were any such thing as any movement in the corpse, it would be tied to the finger, and the bell would ring. So that was an old custom away back.
And that one was called again?
The dead ringer.
The dead ringer.
It was a bell was put on the thing.
Yeah, I never heard it.
Did you not?
No.
Oh, well, that was right. And then a lot of people, they would just leave them lying there and for a couple of days, and without being coffined. Now, if the coffin was to be purchased, it wouldn't go to the house after 12 o'clock at night. It would be two men would go and carry it, you know. That was the tradition. It never came during daylight. It went after 12 o'clock.
After 12, right.
And they were buried in the old graveyard down here in Meva. And they were buried from Letterkenny and Kilmacrennan and different parts of the country. And where Michael McGee's house down there is now, they called it Lag na Gorp. And that was a resting place. Both were other resting places too, but that was one of them there.
Lag na Gorp.
Lag na Gorp, and that's before they went down to... They were carried by on their shoulders, you know.
But you also heard of the likes of... when somebody died, they would turn the clock off, they would stop the clock.
Stop the clock and turn the mirror around to the face of the wall.
Why was that with the mirror?
I don't know why, what they're supposed to, didn't want no reflections, you know. I don't know what was the idea. The same happened when there'd be lightning and they'd turn the mirror around.
Yeah, but with the clock?
The clock would be stopped and it wouldn't be started till the corpse would leave the house. Aye. But, that was obviously not happening, you know. But our old traditions, you know, that's gone and lost, you know, and things we didn't hear tell of, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of these things were fact, you know, and did you ever hear tell of a person after they died? The call the death nip. Did you ever hear tell of
no,
that?
No, called the death nip?
Nip, aye.
Right. You explained to me
well,
now.
Well, it happened to me.
Did it?
I did. And... I'll tell you how it happened to me. It was when Dr. McCloskey died. He died in 48. I used to work on the greens in it and all.
Yeah, yes,
so when
that,
he was
yeah.
dead, when he was dead, I went up to the room when he was dead and all. And there was an uncle, I was sleeping in a room, and my uncle was on the other side of the room in a wee bed. And I remember this one merciful nip on the down there on my side. And I awakened and I got afraid. And it was funny that came into my mind. That I heard tell of it before that, you know, but it didn't come to my mind till I got nipped to found this. So it's quite possible that it was just recorded in my mind who it was, mm-hmm. the doctor.
And it was just a sign of death.
A sign of wanting to be prayed for now, that's what I was told.
Mm.
But wasn't it very strange?
Did you ever get any other signs, Paddy, before a death?
No. Mary out there, she... from Graceland, she was taking turf down past the old Drumnarragh school. Do you know what Drumnarragh school
is? I do, yeah.
Well, she was going up there with a donkey cart, and this woman was standing on a rock and her hand up like that, and she was looking away in the distance. And when she came back, she told the mother who she was, and the woman was dead for some period, maybe years before it. She was the name of Hamilton, lived up in, just on the right-hand side. She wouldn't go up that next day anyway to the bog anyway for any more turf. She was scared. She seen this woman, she was dead. But a lot of people seen dead people, and thanks be to God, I never seen nobody, but there were different ones in the village here who seen that they were dead, you know. Oh, you'll get that too, and a lot of people tell you yarns that they're knowing of, you know. But
I know, well, make up stories, surely.
Make up stories.
Still, though. But Paddy, you've also had a good story about, was that Father O'Donnell or?
Dominic O'Donnell.
Dominic O'Donnell. Tell me now in detail where Dominic O'Donnell was.
Well, he was He was a priest. And
was he from this area?
He was from the area where now I don't know. It'd have been Leslie's book. And the story went. He went in and he nursed this wee girl, it was whatever it was, and they say that a clergyman wasn't supposed to do that. And that was the woman he married, but she'd be a lot younger than him. And he was a clergyman in the old chapel down here, that's down in Keane. He was a clergyman there, and the following Sunday he was a clergyman out in the old church out here. He turned to be a minister. And did you ever see the recitation was made about him? Day?
No.
It's written Irish and it's written English. I have it in there in the book.
Right. So he changed from Catholic to
Protestant.
Right.
And it's in the book, the in Irish and in English, what he about the mother, what she said, you know, to go back again and all that. But he was married out there, and he was married near the family, you know. But the grave's out there, you can see it.
Why was it that he changed? So, like, what?
I don't know at all. I suppose it was just something that, or something that happened at that time. Probably maybe he fell in love with this woman, and that was that. Mm. You know, suppose it was rarely happening in those days.
Yeah.
Eh?
So Dominic O'Donnell.
Aye.
And what kind of time are we talking about, Paddy?
You're talking about 17 something. You know, maybe 150 years ago.
Is that the song in Gaelic, and Saoirse O'Donnell na Finisterre? Do you want to get that book, Paddy? And
I'll take it into you, teach it.
And read it in English, even.
Oh, well, aye. My cousin on the Dominic O'Donnell, that ever I saw thee, 'tis woe to me, for thou wast a priest on Sunday, on the morning of Monday a minister. Return, return, O darling, return, darling, do not abandon me. Return, O my share of the world, or glory will never be seen by thee. 'Twere better for thee to herd cattle, a stick in thy hand and a stack on thee, than to sit underneath the great wonders and to hearken the voices of ministers. Return, return, O darling, etc., O lad over there on the height, and thou in the centre of Tartarus, thou shalt be in the bottom of hell, and all those who live on that lineage. Return, etc., when thou shalt be down, still down in hell, and thousands of tears dropping down from thee, well, there is a place thou shalt learn, which is better, a priest or a minister. Thou, return, etc., thou shalt forsakest both Mary and Jesus, O thou thief, there is none that will trust thee. Thou forsakest the faith that thou lovest, and thou went thy way as a minister. Thou forsakest both Peter and Paul, thou forsakest St. John and the company, thou forsakest the Queen of the world, O, 'tis she that for us pray continually. 'Tis like thou wast never in Rome, and didst ne'er hear book telling certainly. They are damned that depart from that family, and, O Mary, my heart would wonder then. The curse of the priest and the brother, with thee, and the bag as thou leavest them, but worse still is curse of the mother, and all kind that ever be there. This song is supposed to have been composed by Dominic's mother, but Henry O'Moraha thinks that the real author was a brother of Dominic's who was a Roman Catholic priest. O'Donnell continued as curate of Meva under his father-in-law in 1766 and probably until 1769, when Cunningham left Meva for Ramachardoni and Tullabegley. He seems to have remained as an curate and now rector of the Reverend John Mackey until 1774, when his name appeared as curate on Ramachardoni. He returned to Meva. He seems to have inherited his father-in-law's property in Larganria. Cunningham may have no sons. Lived there during his time as rector. Since there was no rector in the parish. The traditional account of Dominic O'Donnell's death is as follows. He was returning on horseback from a clerical meeting in Creasla, and at the foot of Clagan Brea on the boundary of the townland of Dunmore and Kill, his horse stopped to drink and he was thrown off. He never recovered from the effects of this fall and died some time later. When he was on the deathbed, his brother and priest came to see him and urged him to return to the Church of Rome, but he refused. A holy candle was lighted at his bedside, and when it had burned until only an inch was left, he again urged to recant, but he repelled. "When I burn the candle, I will burn the inch," and died a Protestant. That night, the Reverend Dominic Kernahan, known as the Barrahar Mower or Big Friar, was sleeping in a house in the parish. When the woman of the house got up in the morning, she found the friar had already wakened up. "You are awake early, brother," and she said, "I have a right to be awake early," replied the friar. "Why?" she said. "What happened? I dreamt I said I heard the thud of Dominic O'Donnell's skull on the flag of hell, and if you look out you'll see a man on a white horse crossing the wet strand going to tell the minister that Dominic O'Donnell is dead."
My God. A most unusual story,
isn't it?
Aye. You know? Especially at the time,
Reverend Dominic O'Donnell and his wife are buried in the Church of Ireland graveyard in Kerrygart. On the stone over their grave is the following inscription, now barely legible: "In memory of Reverend Dominic O'Donnell, who departed this life November 1793, aged 93 years, also his wife Susan, who departed this life 1813, aged 88. On one side of the grave is buried the Reverend William O'Donnell, and the other side is the grave of Richard O'Donnell, who died in June 1790, aged 42, presumably another son of Dominic's, and his three children, Richard, Charles and Catherine. Richard O'Donnell was lessee of Dundone and Tullahan in 1779, and his name appeared in County Donegal grand jury presentments for 1780. Dominic used to have another son who used to sell cockles on the streets in Letterkenny.
Jeez.
Eh?
Paddy, you had a very, very good other story now. We were talking the last day of a wee woman who used to come, was it from Garthahar? She'd come with cattle and...
Oh, she was Kitnamaw.
Kitnamaw.
She would be, she was married and her name was Houston.
Right.
But she was married now, probably, and she was from way up our turning at the Black Gates up at as you go out by Dunluey. Do you know the road going to Dunluey from Glenveigh?
Yeah.
Well, it's to the right hand side of that. It'll be but anyway, I'll be fit to tell you this. I'll tell you the name of it, I'll get it up.
But she came from this area.
She came from over there, and sheep shearing was done, she would always land at the house, and she had a cow with her, and she had a spinning wheel on her back. And she stayed there. If you had a lock of sheep, there wouldn't be a wheel out of sheep at that time, you know, but whatever it would be, she would be there, and she would carry the wool, and she would make socks, jumpers, and blankets. And she stayed there then, and she would milk the cow, she'd drink her own milk, whatever the thing was, and she grazed it there. And she stayed wherever she would have a shake down on the floor or whatever it was. And she would stay there till that was all done, and then she'd move to the next house. That was her summer programme.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd take the cow then with her on a rope, and she'd own that maybe for a long number of years.
Do you remember?
No, I don't remember, but my mother's brother remembers that.
Yes.
Getting them all. What, that's all the character. She had a cow with her. And she would come and she'd do all that work, and she, I suppose, maybe she got a few shillings, I don't know. But he says he remembers her coming, and there were a spinning wheel over in the old grandmother's place over in Creaseland. I suppose they would maybe have the old wool cad, and she would do the knitting, I don't know. But
yeah,
she'd done the whole process anyway. And she was from, I'll name the place again now, I forget the name of it. It's not at the foot of the hill anyway, there were a couple of houses in it. It was nearly over near the Poison Glen there, you know.
Yeah.
But she done all that, and she got a few bob, I suppose, for it. And
but you also talk about people driving not only cattle, but pigs as well from an area.
Well, Jimmy Gunner and the Gap is dead and gone, and he told me, he says, that's a road, he says, they call Cass and the Muck. And it's up above, on the right-hand side above his house. And I says, what kind of... He says, there were a pad in it. And he says, they drove pigs, he says, from... He says, over west Donegal, he says, into Derry. And he says, they drove geese on it as well. And he says, and they'll be coming back and they'll have whatever we look or stuff with them. And he says, they'll meet the highwaymen or robbers. And they would meet them and the money was taken from them. Someone was murdered, you know.
And so it's increased that? That area is increased, like you said, that road.
That road is, you would have to be unfortunate to be just above. You know where Jimmy Gallagher's the gap is? It's a house out the gap. There was a wee small shop in at one time.
I know that place.
Well, up there, yeah. It, crossing there, it'd be.
There's only two houses there.
That's all.
Yeah.
I would be coming in there from Dunluce and that country, you see. Mm-hmm. You'd be away in the hills all the time. And there'd be no road there or nothing at that time. You'd cross maybe the road there and into Letterkenny and into Derry, you know. It was all a kind of a pad, you know.
But people were murdered often.
There would be, the money would be taken off them, and I suppose they'd have to put up a struggle, and some of them were murdered, you know. These highwaymen were on the road for that purpose, you know.
You mentioned earlier now, and you can remember a piece in a paper, and you remember the incident of a corpse was found in Creasla, Paddy, in the bog. Right?
In the bog, aye. Well, it was Fonsy Gallagher, and who was cutting turf along with him in a place called, it would be the Cushland, they called it. It would be Derry Fad Bog, and they were cutting turf. Now, when they started to cut the common, these bits of bone, and then they discovered that it was a corpse. There were fragments of bones and part of the skeleton, and there was a wee bit of leather got that would be part of the galluses. We called them galluses, they would be braces.
Yeah.
And that was it, and then it was cleaned up and it was taken to probably Creasla, and it was sent away in the boxes for identification. Now, what happened to it after that? I suppose there was no such thing as much, there would be no such thing as any investigation much about it. It went away and that was the end of the story, you know.
But the local people thought they knew who?
They were thinking that it might have been this man, the name of Harkin. He used to buy hens and buy rabbits and all that type of stuff. And he'd be walking, you see, and probably then he would get them taken by maybe some transport, you know.
Yeah.
But he was disappeared and he never was seen.
I suppose he was carrying, you know, so much
carrying money. Carrying
money,
you know, he'd be robbed for that purpose, you know, for the money, you know.
Yeah, well, it was never proved, but...
Never was proved, no.
And the locality people think that it was...
People think that it might have been him, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people just disappeared. There was a woman, she came down from Termon, in Leitrim time, well, maybe 100 years ago. There was a wee loch up in the bog there. They call it Law Evelyn. And this man says to me, he says, I'll tell you, he says, the woman why it was called that, he says, the woman was going down to pay rates in Mulroy and she was drowned in that law. And I says, when would that be? Oh, he says, it would be donkeys years ago, he says, but he says, they must have got her, I says, well, he says, I suppose maybe she died, maybe she was along the lock and they got her, and I suppose she was taken then, probably, and she was taken to maybe back home or buried, you know.
Maybe even that she was called Evelyn when it was called Law Evelyn?
Well, it was called Law Evelyn. He says it was called Law Evelyn after her, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Gee. But Paddy, you also, we go back to your own work, you went across to Fannin for Slattamara, or?
I went over to Minlara to... went over with coal, there was a boat coming into Mulroy, and she was a boat they called the Man Maid. She was a steamboat.
Was she coming from Scotland? Like
she would be coming from England, I suppose. She was trading between here, and she used to come in very often to Mulroy, the Banthorn, the Man Maid. They were originally registered in Northern Ireland. They were from down, what do you call it? Oh, the bottom of the other side of the area, you know. And then she'll come in with coal, and we'll be working at the boat, getting coal. And I remember then, Joe McGinley was over from that part of your country, and he was a housing man, we called him, you know, around about Grants. And he was also in charge of the Slattamaras and that. And I remember we had to go to Hannah Dixon to my roti and then go down to that island then across the strand for Slattamaras. And we had to put on the load there and take them to the boat and the other wagons in it as well.
So you were driving lorry loads to Mulroy?
That's right, aye.
Yeah.
Aye. They would be taken out then and both went to England after that, you know. They used to, before my time too, the build the rack. That would be seaweed. They bailed it in big bales and it went out at Mulroy. Now, where it went after that, I don't know, you know, but it must have went to England for medicine or for making whatever kind of medical stuff they made out of it, you know. But
they make iodine out of it, don't they?
Either Slatmaris or seaweed or seaweed, sea rods. But then in later years then that stopped. No, before that they had what you call wee kilns made and they melted the sea rods.
Kelp.
A kelp.
Yeah.
And you could smell it these when the wind would be blowing in this direction. I smelt it myself, it was a peculiar type of smell. But
supposed
it was
to be a lovely smell.
Lovely altogether. Yeah. There are stone out there where this kelp had kind of united to the stone, you know.
Yeah, it would be like hard as a rock.
Well, hard as a stone, hard as a rock. I'll show you the stone.
Yeah.
It's out there beside the range. I've got it down in the bottom, down in
so
the...
So where were they burning the kelp in your time?
They'll be burning it in Dewey, and they'll be burning it in Melmore, and they were burning it in three or four different places in the bottom, you know, around the coast there. That little kilns would be around about the size of a cart wheel, mm-hmm. and then there were a hole on one side for extracting the stuff out of it. And then they put in the stuff and they kept melting away. It would be fairly dry, I suppose.
It would. And where were they taking it then?
It would be taken in on lorry to go on the train in Chrysler. It would be taken to Chrysler, you see. That would be the nearest depot, the nearest place, mm-hmm. you know. The trolley had old lorries in at that time. And they would be, it would be taken there then. There wouldn't be a wild lot, I would say, going, you know, but there'd be as much as it'd be. It would maybe a few ton of that, you know.
Yeah. But you remember a time, like you talked about the lorries there, you remember a time when there weren't many vehicles on the road, Paddy, like the first couple of cars and lorries or whatever?
The first couple of cars that were here, I don't remember it. But he was a man named McCoach bought one, had one. And then Lord Leitrim. He was the next man in a car. Charles Clemens, I would say, but he'd be only a young man at that time.
He'd be fourth there, like.
Aye, he'd be the fourth. Yeah. Aye. They had cars, and this Robert McCoach had a car, and then everyone got cars then after that, you know. But during the war years, there were lorry and turf, you see, and the Lost Woolley had a lorry, and so had Russell to Ballyhair. They had a man driving there called Jim McTaggart, and he was taking down turf.
From here too?
From a place called Minahoo, Lost Salt, Tulla, all over round down to the bottom and round here.
Driving it to St Johnston? Or?
No, they were coming here. Turf would be cut for home use, you know.
Right. Okay.
But McKayley and them, those men and that catered from West Donegal to St Johnston during the war years. And sometimes then there would be the train would. When the train was coming into Chrysler or going to Burtonport, you'd stop on a Sunday along the line and there'd be big stacks of turf too, and you'd get so much to fill up a carriage. And they went to St Johnston, you know.
Carriages of turf, yeah.
Carriages of turf, yeah. You got so much for filling them. I remember the heaps of turf when I'd go to my mother along the line, and a lot of fellas then would get a few shillings for filling them, you know.
For a carriage load, yeah.
Aye, for like they were just open carriages, you know,
yeah.
Kind of crits on them like a lorry, you know. And then they used to take they were carting turf from a place called, do you know where Cashel na Gore is?
I do, yeah.
Well, they were carting turf from there to a big stack there to Barrick. And there were a stack there, it would be about, I don't know, many 100 yards long. And that stuff was used for council purposes, for breakers, for breaking stones and rolling roads and one thing and another. And some of that turf that they were taking from Minahoo and there went to the Phoenix Park in Dublin, you know. But there were a lot of men had lorries at that time, you know, and they were carting stuff from West Donegal and from these hills up here. The soldiers used to be there from Fanar cutting turf during the summer months.
Where were they, Paddy?
They were up on Minahoo, cutting the turf for soldiers during the war years, you know.
Right, from Fanar Camp.
Fanar Camp, aye. And they had that big tent up there, and then there were people cooking, you know, and they'd done the cutting, and the, they done all the cutting and working the turf, and then there were men, local men paid, you got 6 or 8 shillings a day with a donkey and creel sticking out turf to a big stack, and then the lorry then would collect the stack of turf and take them to St. Johnson, you know.
Did you work on that?
Never, no. I never worked at it at
not
all.
Not driving or anything?
No, no, not in later years. It was in later years that we started, during the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, they were...
I never heard of the soldiers now working on...
Aye, the soldiers worked there. Yeah. They did. And I remember them coming down to get a yard marching in the evening from Minahoo, and that's a bit of Bob Glen. And they were cutting turf there, and they had tents up there on the flats, and I suppose they got drinking, they got their grubs, or grub went up to them, you know. Oh, aye, there were dozens of them in it. There were a big fella down in Dewey, they called Charlie Charlie John Argyll. And he was telling me that he was in it at the cutting of the turf. And he says, you would cut them, and he says, there'd be men holding them. And, oh, he says, they spent the summer there. Well, the weather was good too, you see.
Oh, yeah.
Different to what it is now.
Oh, completely.
The fairies is a lot of people believed in fairies, and a lot of people believed in oil pusillics and all that, because if they had a horse, they had what you call a red brew band there above the winkers. That doesn't give away bad luck or anyone blinking them.
A red band?
A red blanket, about 2.5 inches wide. It went across the brew band, or across the forehead of the horse. Or a donkey of that. Or if it was a donkey of the like of that, or if we would have a red cloth on a stick of the like of that. A lot of people out there, and they were sent to different parts around the country here, because they lost their farm out there, and he planted his own cane in it, you know.
Yeah. He seemed to have that policy, and, you know, he paid his workers by giving them land.
Surely. He built a place up in Carrick called the Slit Road, or about 8 or 10 houses in it, and the particular place he sent them out of was a place called Straham, down there along the water. So he had round that the manor house, and he had the whole thing intact. There were 700 something acres inside the wall, you know, so that left them people. But he built good houses for them. But there were no options, but they had to go.
Well, that's it, like.
They had to go, you see.
He looked after his workers quite well.
That's right. Yeah. Well, nearly all the people that were around here or around that area worked in Mulroy, turning turnips, so setting spuds, cutting corn and whatnot, you know, they were full time there.
So they were working for the landlord? Like
they were, surely. And he had a dairy out there, and he produced all the products that was used in Rosapenna.
Oh, for the hotel, right.
And then he had the Ganya Moor. He had the Melmoor, and he had...
What's the Grania Moor?
She was the boat.
Oh, right.
And he had the Grania Whale, and he had the Kerry Gert, and he had the Melmoor. And the last boat he had was the Grania Moor. She was sold then to the British as a troop ship, you know. That'd be before the train started running Creasley, you know. She'd be a steamboat. Aye, the Grania Moor. There was a man out here, he was skipper on it, called Johnny McConnell. And... there were different local men, skipper or deckhand and all that, you know.
But they would be trading with Scotland a lot, wouldn't
they? Oh, crepes, aye, and Northern Ireland.
Right.
You could go out here on the boat, and you could take your produce to Glasgow, and you could go and sell it. You know, it was a good means of transport too, you know. Then in later years, Charlie McKim, he took the whole thing over. He was worked for Letterman, and then he took over the thing on his own. Him and Selk and them, and they used to buy spuds, and they sent them to different places in England. That was in late years, in the 50s and 60s. That all types of spuds. Home Guard and Pilot and Iron Banner and Majestic and Mara Spear and all that type of stuff. I lorried spuds on there, that's just how I know. You know, only that I wouldn't know.
Yeah, anymore. You know, exactly.
Lorried coal up it. I took coal to Rathmullen, and that was £6 a ton. That was the coal, 6 shillings a bag. It was 100 weight bags, you felt it and you took it and you sold it over there then. And for 6 shillings a bag, and you carried it off for Well, they wouldn't be the modern day bags and the same as now, old sport bags, every kind of 200 weight bags and one thing, you know. Went to Dublin for Guinness Brewery. And
you carried barrels of Guinness?
Aye. And they were a strike on, you see. They were a strike on and there was nobody up written, so we'd done that.
So you were taking it to the pubs locally and around the country?
You would, aye. It was in barrels, you see, big heavy barrels. You had three or four tyres and you put the tyre down the ground and you tip the barrel down on it, you know, you put the end of the barrel down.
Yeah.
You wouldn't let it hit the ground for you'd burst, you know. They were exceptionally very strong barrels, Guinness barrels, you know. And we went to...
How long did that strike last then?
Well, it didn't last very, very long altogether, you know. I would say myself that maybe I'd done about three or four runs, you know. And then I was up then, with Mandy's lorry before that, we were up in Dublin.
Was that Mandy McGrady's?
Mandy Gallagher.
Gallagher.
We were up in Dublin for the timber for that dance hall that's down there. It was there at that time, it's a cafe now, and a place called T&C Martin's, who stayed in Dublin three or four days. We left Dublin at dinner time, we'll say today. And we drove all night and next night we were home. It was about 2 days nearly coming. But we had a big load of timber on a small lorry and T&C Martins who were to get it cut and you'd dare put your hand on anything because if you did, the men working there would strike. You couldn't, they'd done the putting on the timber and you backed in there and you'd done your own thing. You sat there till the load was on, should that be 2 days.
That was for the dance hall, Paddy.
Aye.
And what was the dance hall called?
They called it the North Star Ballroom.
Right. Here in Carrigart.
Aye. And the first band that was in it was they were from Bungrana. What the hell did they call them? Get their name now too. And then there were different bands and the Sleaf Foy and the whole lot and Johnny McCaffrey and Fanny McCaffrey and Johnny, what do you call him, from Derry. Oh, there were different big bands and different women singing there.
The place was going good, though, Paddy.
Going good at that
time.
Yeah. But then it all just went flop. There were a woman that singing into called Margaret Barry.
She was a traveller, wasn't she?
Eh?
She was a traveller.
She was, and Anne Shelton. She was an English girl. And The Sleaf Foy and there were different bands there in the Ponsonbys and McCafferty's.
Ponsonbys from Letterkenny?
Aye. There were a true get oil crack, but then that was the end of this era and it was the end of the story too. It was just, from it opened, it wasn't a success.
No.
You could do a full day's lorry in a turf to the bottom, which was 25 shillings, an old money, a load. And it took 10 shillings worth of petrol for the 5 load, you know. But that all changed then after that. You'd put on a load of turf here, you'd buy it for £6, Los Salt, and you'd drive it down to Port Sand Hotel, and you got £3.50 for taking it down, and you clean, swipe it out, and you went to buy a whisky for gravel, and you put on a load of gravel, and you got another fiver for the load of gravel taking it home. You'd have about £10 for the day.
But you worked hard for it.
You worked hard. If you worked with a council, you got about £4.50 for the £4.10 for the day's work.
Mm.
That's not count your own wages or nothing.
But then the coal, you were taking that from Derry, Paddy?
Taken from Mulroy. It was coming down on the boat.
Right.
Coming down on the boat to Mulroy.
Ah, yeah.
And then you would carry it round to Dunfanny and Valcarra, Letterkenny sometimes, from Elton, Mulford, Fannett, Rathmullen.
Anywhere where you could sell it.
Aye, they'd all ring in, you see, and he'd have two men out in the store with a shed there and filling away, you know. It was ruthless bloody work.
Oh, it was tough work.
I'm telling you, and there were no such thing as that.
You had to load the lorry and unload it.
You had to load it and undo it, and your bag was torn off you.
Oh, aye.
And it was no odds whether it was wet or dry, you were out, you know.
Yeah.
But filling the gravel was the same. You just went down when the tide was coming in and you put down the side and you just tore into it just where Bellmouth Navy shoveled till the sweat was blinding you because the tide was coming, you see, and then you had to turn put up the other side, and you take a man down with you, you know, would have a fair knowledge of the tide coming and going, and he'd charge you 7 and 6 pence and he'd give you a hand to fill, but he'd charge you for trespass, you know, and the way he rode in through his ground.
Paddy, you're the type of fella then, even though you suppose you would say you're retired, but you never ever stop working. You still have your own workshop, which I saw the first day I came here, and I can see it from here even.
Aye.
But like, you do a lot of work of every type, Paddy.
I do a lot of puttering there at old tractors and one thing and another. I wouldn't be a mechanic now.
But you still build.
I just do my own thing, you know.
And right now you're building wee carts, you said?
Building carts, aye. Making one for the park down here. One
right. So kind of they're more ornamentation, like your.
Oh, that would be. Yeah. Some of them you could use one of them now. The one going into the cart park for holding flowers. You could, if you had a donkey, you could yoke the donkey.
Oh, it's the size of a cart. Donkey cart.
Aye. So I have one of my own down there that I just took down for show, to the vintage thing every year. A few tractors I take down there too, you know. I have one up here in Alice Chalmer, and I have a couple of great tractors, diesels, and I have a couple of majors, and I have a Davy Brown, you know.
So even building the cart, Paddy, you'd even make the wheels, would you? Like
I started now doing the wheels, and I never made a wheel in my life, but I rummed a wheel now, and I'm building two horse cart wheels. I'm making two, rumming them in the new, you know. Getting the timber cut with Robert McMahon in Trenta. He is the only man maybe in Donegal has a saw or a, you know, the way of cutting, you know. And he cuts ash, oak or anything at all, you know, cuts in these different woods here, and he cuts in Glenara, and he'll cut in different places, you know. Very good man,
yeah.
Powerful altogether. And he says to me, he says, I suppose, he says, there's no man at this work on any place, only myself, because he's working at it himself. He couldn't insure nobody, you know. But he has the plant and he has the whole thing, and he organised that all himself. I was telling him, I says, I come up here with a load of timber to your father when he was cutting here with a water wheel. And that's a brave while ago. And, he says, the water wheel, he says, never was a great success. He says, it lacked in power, he says. And even when my father was cutting, he says, he told me he had to get an engine too to cut, you know. The water wheel was all right, sure. I suppose it wouldn't be.
Yeah, powerful enough. But would he have a special saw though now?
Oh, yes, he has two big deep bandsaws that cuts that way.
Right.
And then he has a circular with inset teeth in it.
He had no problem then.
But no problem, he could cut you anything, you know. And he would spend all day with you, you know, that type of a man telling you and all that, you know.
He has time.
Very interesting.
He makes time.
Aye, and see, when that man's gone, that'll be the end of the sawing area in Donegal.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
And very interesting man, and he'll show you the whole ins and outs of the whole thing, because it's worth a tipping too.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You know, it's worth a tipping.
Yeah.
And if you had the way of photographing the whole thing, it'd be very interesting.
Would be worth videoing even, yeah.
That would, surely.
Paddy, I was looking that day, I was in your workshop too, you have an old thrashing mill.
That's right, Dad.
And you bought it and you're repairing it, is that right?
Redoing it in the new again.
Yeah. One side that I was looking at was done.
That mill was bought in the 60s, the time of that. There was a storm here called Debbie. And it'll be in the 60s, the early 60s. And it was a man called Sammy McCloy bought it in Armagh at Annabella. And he says, they bought it in Armagh, and he says he took the Bella down. I think he took the mill down first, and then he took the baler down. He took the baler down after a jeep, and he took the mill down after the tractor. But he didn't say much he gave for it now. But anyway, Sammy bought the whole plant, but I went up with him just to get the dates of him, because I was going to put that on it and put on Davy Gallagher's name, the man who bought the mill off and all. I know the old history, and put it on the side of. When I bought the mill of Davy, Davy's dead, this 2 years, an old man, and I went, I think he asked 700 or something for it, and I says, that's okay, I'll take it. I said, no good in chopping or talking about it. I says, that's the end of the story. And we took it around on the 12th of July, that following July. I pumped the wheels and I got a man to go around, and we left here at 3 o'clock in the morning, we were back again at 6, report Allen. And so there were only two in Donegal, two Allen Mills, the same, another man outside Letterkenny and that one. But we didn't have a dean, so I done a lot of work to it, but a lot of work to be done yet to it, you know.
But it's nearly, it's taking shape though, Paddy.
Oh, it is, right. Yeah. It's a good shape, but a lot of new timber in it, but the axles was all rotten in it. And the machinery they had before this, no man took pride on going into it. Just darned and nailed a bit of a board here, nailed a bit of a board there. There's no such thing as washing them out or cleaning them or nothing, you know. It's the same with tractors. They never took no care of anything. It's the same with the horses too and the harness. They threw the harness on the state there till they were maybe going to work with maybe in a week or two after. And the whole thing, fishy and neck collar and all that, the whole thing went lost, you know.
How old would that mill be, Paddy?
That mill would be, she was built in 38 or 39. It's on the axle of the stump of the axle.
And there's very few of them to be found now.
Very few, you get them, you know, and they're in very bad shape, you know, rotten, you know. But if we had got anyone to fix that old mill or do it up, you know, it would cost you a fortune, you know.
It would, yeah.
It wouldn't hardly pay you, you know. No. It's only just for vintage work.
But you like doing that type of work.
Yeah, it's inside, you see. Mm. It's inside and you can always spend a couple of hours now and again at it, you know. But otherwise it wouldn't pay you at all, you know. It's just interesting.
Paddy, I've taken up your time again and maybe cut today and give you a break to go back to your work again. And
well, any time at all you can give me a shout next week if you're about.
I will be.